Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 5, 2014, Artist Sibian 8, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Yield Not to Temptation. Yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. Each victory will help you some other to win. Fought manfully onward, dark passions subdue. Look ever to Joshua, He'll carry you through. Ask the Savior to help you, comfort, strengthen, and keep you. He is willing to aid you, He will carry you through. Shun evil companions that language disdain. Yah's name hold in reverence, not take it in vain. Be thoughtful and earnest, kind-hearted and true. Look ever to Yahshua, He'll carry you through. Ask the Savior to help you, comfort, strengthen, and keep you. He is willing to aid you, He will carry you through. To Him that overcometh, Yah giveth a crown. Through faith we will conquer, though often cast down. He who is our Savior, our strength will renew. Look ever to Yahshua, He'll carry you through. Ask the Savior to help you, comfort, strengthen, and keep you. He is willing to aid you, He will carry you through. Okay, we're in part 5 now, the Shepherd Rod, volume 2. We're dealing with the subject of the leopard-like beast. We're going to continue on. Page 94 from the Shepherd's Rod. First, let's turn to a scripture that has to deal with the word perfect. It says in Genesis 6:9 that these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with the Yahweh. Okay. And then in Genesis 17:1, and when Abram was 90 years old and nine, the Yahweh appeared unto Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty Yahweh, walk before me and be thou perfect. Now, Abraham was 99 years old when Yahweh appeared to him and admonished him to walk before him and be perfect. And this is at the time when Abraham brought forth Isaac by Sarah, the one born of the Spirit. And so Yahweh tells him that point on now, walk before me and be thou perfect. And in Leviticus 22:21 it says, and whosoever offereth a sacrifice of peace, offerings unto Yahweh, to accomplish his vow, or a freewill offering, in beeves or sheep, it shall be perfect. To be accepted, it shall be no blemish therein. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 18 it says, thou shalt be perfect with the Yahweh thy Elohim. Now we might just read that whole chapter of Deuteronomy 18. It said the priest, the Levites, and all the tribe of Levi shall have no part nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Yahweh made by fire and his inheritance. Therefore shall they have no inheritance among their brethren. The Yahweh is their inheritance, as he has said unto them. And this shall be the priest's due from the people. From them that offer a sacrifice, whether it be ox or sheep, and they shall give unto the priest the shoulder and the two cheeks and the maw. The first fruit also of thy corn, of thy wine, and of thine oil, and the first of the fleece of thy sheep shalt thou give him. For the Yahweh the Elohim hath chosen him out of all thy tribes to stand to minister in the name of the Yahweh, him and his sons forever. And if a Levite come from any of thy gates out of all Israel, where he sojourn and come with all the desire of his mind unto the place which the Yahweh shall choose, then he shall minister in the name of the Yahweh his Elohim as all his brethren the Levites do, which stand there before the Yahweh. They shall have like portions to eat besides that which cometh of the sale of his patrimony. When thou art come into the land which the Yahweh the Elohim giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. Okay, now, Yahweh gave Gilead Sinner that portion in the desert. And in 1970 to 2010 was an allotted time for Gilead Sinner, and the portion of the land of Texas he gave to Gilead Sinner was that part of the desert in West Texas. And so he says, when thou art come into the land which the Yahweh the Elohim giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. But that's where Gilead Sinner ended up learning to do all the abominations of those around us. And I know that Yahweh has brought us here to Liberty Hill, Texas, right here in the heart of Texas, in the hill countries of Judea, the antiquity of Judea. And he's telling us now, you are to turn away from those abominations that you protested against, and that you are not to do after the abominations of those nations. Okay, let us go on. Deuteronomy 18:10. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divinations, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch. Okay. Okay, Deuteronomy 18:11, or a charmer, or a consulter with the familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. Well, that's where we did have people in our midst at Gilead Center that had familiar spirits, and we did have them come in and out, different ones. We've had it. We had it as one of the members. There, that was a charmer. It was actually a wizard with the familiar spirits. And Brother Johnson consulted unto that wizard. That was his wife, Laura May. She was a witch, and he consulted unto her for his final answer on anything he wanted to know. And that's what got him in trouble. Deuteronomy 18:12. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Yahweh, and because of these abominations, the Yahweh the Elohim doth drive them out from before thee. So, because of their abominations, so what do you think is going to happen in the land of Israel today in Jerusalem? They've got every abominable thing in Jerusalem. trying to snuff the life out of the heart of that city, and the leaders of Israel are compromising on every hand, and it's all full of abomination. And Zechariah 14 says Judah's going to fight at Jerusalem. Says Judah's going to also fight at Jerusalem, which is the house of David. So when that great battle takes place, the house of David is going to be right there leading the charge against those evil nations. Deuteronomy 18:13, thou shalt be perfect with the Yahweh thy Elohim. So first he told him, he said, for all that do these things are an abomination unto Yahweh. And because of these abominations, the Yahweh thy Elohim doth drive them out from before thee. Thou shalt be perfect with the Yahweh thy Elohim. For these nations of which thou shalt possess, hearken unto observers of times, and unto diviners. But as for thee, the Yahweh thy Elohim hath not suffered thee to do so, or so to do. The Yahweh thy Elohim will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him ye shall hearken. Well, because these abominations were raising their ugly head in the temple there at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, Yahweh had to raise up a prophet from the midst of them, and in the midst of them, and try to give a warning unto the leadership and get them to turn that ship around. Okay. Deuteronomy 18:16. According to all that thou desirest of Yahweh thy Elohim in Horeb in the day of the assembly sent, let me not hear again the voice of Yahweh my Elohim, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not. And the Yahweh said unto me, if they have well spoken that which they have spoken, I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. So the day that the voice spoke to me from heaven and said, here's a message for the prophet, and said, give him everything that I have commanded you. And I gave everything that I could remember, and then I left off talking with him, and we drove a few more miles down the road, and I said, oh my goodness, I would be remiss in my duty if I don't give you this last command from heaven. I said, I forgot. And I gave it to him. So he says that you're to give all that I command him. Okay, Deuteronomy 18:19. And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. Okay, but the prophet which shall presume to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, even that prophet shall die. Well, that's exactly what happened. And that prophet now is dead. Deuteronomy 18:21. And if thou say in thine heart, how shall we know the word which Yahweh hath not spoken? When a prophet speaketh in the name of Yahweh, if the thing follow not, nor come to pass, that is the thing which the Yahweh hath not spoken, but the prophet hath spoken it presumptuously, thou shalt not be afraid of him. So now do you wonder why, whenever Brother Johnson gave me that letter of dismissal in 2002 and pronounced a death sentence upon me, and I said, I'm not worried about that. I said, that's all a bunch of lies. I'm going to turn that back upon his own head. I'm not going to be afraid of that situation, because I know it's not true. And I fulfill that right there in Deuteronomy 18:22. It said, but the prophet has spoken it presumptuously, thou shalt not be afraid of him. Well, Brother John had already proved himself for the past 32 years of speaking so many things presumptuously that didn't come to pass, that nobody was afraid of him. Nobody was afraid of him. Okay, enough said on that. Let us go to our main study now. We're on page 94, Shepherd Rod, Volume 2 by the V.T. Harker. And we're on the part about the leopard-like beast. And incidentally, that's that fifth beast, actually. The fifth beast. Coming up as a follow-up from those four beasts that Daniel saw in vision. The fourth one being the nondescript beast representing pagan Rome at the cross. And so this fifth one is the one representing pagan Rome, ecclesiastical Rome, coming out of the Dark Ages in 1798. So it says that, thus preparing a church to stand. Let's do a little review on that. And it says, therefore, they who lower the standard and refuse to reform at the sounding of the trumpet are the very ones who cause division in the church of the Elohim. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions. Now, just talking about division means the separate groups of people or even two people from each other. And offenses contrary unto the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Yahshua Messiah, but their own belly, and by good works and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple, Romans 16:17-18. Since the history of the church is such, and the last section led to sins, it is in a worse condition and under greater condemnation than any previous one. Now notice how V.T. Hollis, with the inspiration working here, he says, since the history of the church is such, and the last section led to sins, the last section of the Adventist church is Gilead's sin, is in a worse condition than the two previous sections of Carmel and Bashan, those two feeding pastures representing the Davidians and the Adventists. So it says they're in worse condition and under greater condemnation than any previous one. And as there is no time left for the calling out of a new movement, then a message of the amazing light and stern rebuke through the worthy Elohim with the manifestations of the divine judgments is the only remedy that can bring true conversion and reformation. Now, I want to go back and read again. It says that since the history of the church of the house of Israel, starting with the first church, Ephesus, with Paul as the angel of the first church back in the first century, and unto the last one, Laodicean church, that's the seventh one. That's what it's talking about. It said, this Laodicean is in worse condition and under greater condemnation than any of their previous six churches, starting with Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia. See, the Laodicean is under greater condemnation than her six predecessors. So let's continue now. It says, thus preparing a church to stand with out spot, wrinkle, or any such thing of which only can be said, and the dragon was wroth with the woman, the church as a body, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Elohim and have the testimony of the Yahshua Messiah. Now, the 144,000 is the remnant of the seed of Gilead's center. Gilead's center is your third section of the Adventist movement and of the Adventist church, and so therefore the seed of Israel was processed through those three feeding pastures, starting with Bashan, Carmel, and then Gilead. Revelation 12:17. It is the purity of the church that incurs the wrath of the dragon. These seven churches were also symbolized by the seven candlesticks and the leadership of the same churches by the seven angels. Okay, and the seventh angel was the one in charge of Laodicea. That's the one that we have come to know by name as a fallible angel, man angel here on earth. And so therefore we have identified this fallen angel that was in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea. So we read, "The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. For the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches." Revelation 1:20. "And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write." Revelation 3:14. So now we can put a time, place, face, and date on this prophecy, which took place in 2002 at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas. Note the message is addressed unto the angel, the leadership, and not unto the candlestick, the church as a body. Therefore, the condemnation is not to the candlestick, but unto the angel. Okay. So, that's the reason why the laity had an opportunity then to come out from the church, because the condemnation was on the leader, the angel of the candlestick. "Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." Revelation 3:17. Now notice that this angel responded to Yahshua. Yahshua is the one speaking these words to him. Yahshua himself. And this angel responded by saying, "I'm rich and increased with gifts, and I don't have need of anything, because I'm the only one in this Laodicean church that has inspiration. And anything that comes from heaven, I get it firsthand. And then I do with it what I will. So therefore, I'm rich and increased with goods. I have a direct line into heaven. Anything I need, all I got to do is ask for it, and he'll give it to me, and whatever I need. All my bills are paid for, and so forth. I have an income. And so therefore, I'm rich and increased with goods, and I don't really have need of anything. I'm very comfortable like I am out here in this desert." But Brother Johnson, by his actions, that's what he was telling Yahshua in 2002. "I don't need any new messages from a new messenger to me. I've been getting all my messages firsthand for the last 32 years from heaven, and I've been doing quite well with it." And so that was his condition, and he felt comfortable in it. Let's continue on. "My brethren, this is not against you, for it is Yahshua speaking who died for you. But it will be if you change not your course of the action." Now, I know we've talked for many years that Yahshua didn't die for me or anybody, because I wasn't living at the time that he died on the cross. But you know what? That's a misnomer. You're going to find out that Brother Johnson was one giving that light on Yahshua didn't die for me. And I was with him at the moment it came to him. We were driving in his car in California in 1981. We went out there on a mission, and I went with him and his wife. And he was driving along, and he says, "I just got this inspiration from heaven. Christ didn't die for me. He didn't die for you. He only died for those in the Old Testament." Well, you know what? Paul said, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's in Romans chapter 5. He said, while we were yet sinners. Those that are preordained in the foundation of the world, Yahshua did die for you too. If you weren't preordained, then he didn't die for you. I was preordained. I wasn't living when Yahshua died on the cross, but he died for me, just like he died for Paul. Paul was persecuting Yahweh's disciples at the time that Yahshua died on the cross. Paul was persecuting the church of Yahshua. He was killing them. He was hailing them into prison. He was working for the Pharisees. He's working for the enemy to Yahshua and his followers. But yet Yahshua died for him because he was preordained to fulfill the position that he fulfilled, to be the 12th apostle. So if Yahshua died for the 11 apostles, 11 disciples, well, then he died for the 12th one also, Paul. But Paul wasn't identified until 3.5 years later, after the 11 was made up, and the disciples had chosen a 12th one to take the place of Judas Iscariot, and Matthias by name. And yet Yahshua didn't approve of that 12th one, and he showed his disapproval when he chose Paul 3.5 years later to take Matthias' place and be one of the 12 apostles. And what did Paul say on his conversion? While I was yet a sinner, Yahshua died for me. Okay. Well, I was born, and 2,000 years later, about, that I was preordained just like Paul was from the foundation of the world. And I was born in sin and grew up a sinner, and sinned most of my adult life. Lived in sin. Until I learned about the sanctuary service and learned how to stop sinning. Okay, so where are we at today? If Yahshua hadn't died for us and those that were preordained in the foundation of the world, we would not be here today. So when Verlus Johnson discovered that doctrine, that Christ didn't die for me, well, he went on the radio after he got back home to Texas off that California trip that 1981, and he went on the radio, and that's the first thing out of his mouth as quick as he'd get on the radio was, Christ didn't die for you, friends, you Gentile brethren out there. Christ didn't die for you. Well, the owner of the radio station promptly jerked him up and kicked him off the air and told him that he was a danger to the body of Christ. He says, you are a danger. Well, we felt terrible because they wouldn't accept that the truth of what the prophet had put out over the air. But they didn't accept Verlus Johnson as no prophet. They didn't know who he was. And so Verlus Johnson was an alarmist to the whole Gentile world. And rightfully so, because, you know, the Gentile world, they all have that one main doctrine that Christ died for me. And so they use that Romans 5 where Paul says, while we were yet sinners, he died for us. But you know what? I believe that. And so, but I can also tell you one thing. He died for those under the First Testament, first and foremost. We have plenty of scriptures to back that up, to close out the Old Testament. He died for every one of them. But he died for every one of those also that was living at the cross, that accepted him, was converted unto him. His death also was for them. But the death was what Romans chapter 5 was. It says, to be reconciled unto the Father. It says, much more by his death you shall be reconciled unto the Father by his death. Okay, let us go on. So it says, my brethren, this is not against you, for it is Yahshua speaking who died for you, but it will be if you change not your course of the action. Now here V.T. Hodoff is telling these Adventists that Christ died for them. Of course, he didn't know who to explain here to about Christ died for them. He didn't know how to do that. He should have said those that are preordained from the foundation of the world. He died for, but he didn't have the inspiration on that. He didn't die for those terrorists that infiltrated the Adventist Church knowingly, had no intention of becoming a part of the flock of Israel. He didn't die for those. He died for those lost sheep of the house of Israel. All right. Now he went. Yahshua one day went along and he found a man named Zacchaeus, a little Jew fellow, up in a tree. And he said, "Come down, Zacchaeus. I must abide at your house today." Okay. He identified Zacchaeus as being one of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Well, Zacchaeus was alive, and Yahshua was crucified on the cross. So Yahshua died for Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was a lost sinner until Yahshua found him and then died for him and saved him. So Yahshua died also for the lost sheep of the house of Israel that were alive at his crucifixion. All right, that's wrong. But he says, "My brethren, this is not against you, for it is Yahshua speaking who died for you. But it will be if you change not your course of the action, that Yahshua, by assembling these seven churches in a group of seven candlesticks and giving the blackest record to the last one, is not calling the later sins valid, then neither is the interpretation of the heads doing so. It is not because the later sins are better that they are not called Babylon, for their record is worse." Okay, so it says their record is worse, but it is to show that on account of their increased light, he is to deal differently with them. It is to prove that if the angel leadership of the church of the later sins should reject the message of the true witness, he cannot call the 144,000 out from the midst of them into another movement by the call of Revelation 18. "Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of a sin that you receive not of her plagues," Revelation 18:4. "But rather, by the message of Revelation 7 and Ezekiel 9, thus speedily releasing his people and quickly finish the work and cut it short in the righteousness, because the short work will Yahweh make upon the earth," Romans 9:28. Disobedience to the word of the Elohim is blasphemy, and blasphemy is hypocrisy. That is to say, they are not what they profess to be. Hypocrisy hides the crying sins under the appearance of the virtue. This sin of the hypocrisy is difficult to cure in that it is not easily discovered by man. We cannot understand the hearts of others, nor discern between the cloak of the hypocrisy and the life of holiness. A spiritual deception has its beginning from a being other than a human. Therefore, the scheme is so cunning that it cannot be discerned by the finite observation. This kind of deception can only be recognized with the close scrutiny of the holy word of Yahweh and by the aid of his spirit. Disobedience unto the word of Elohim is blasphemy, and blasphemy is hypocrisy. That is to say, they are not what they profess to be. Hypocrisy hides the crying sins under the appearance of virtue. For this sin of the hypocrisy is difficult to cure, and that it is not easily discovered by men. We cannot understand the hearts of others, or discern between the cloak of hypocrisy and the life of the holiness. A spiritual deception has its beginning from a being other than human. Therefore, the scheme is so cunning that it cannot be discerned by the finite observation. This kind of deception can only be recognized under the close scrutiny of the holy word of Elohim and by the aid of his spirit. For the effectual means to cure such a well-devised plan of the deception is a steadfast belief in that there is an all-seeing eye of the Yahweh who sees sin wherever it is and will bring it into the judgment. A hypocrite may hide his sin from the eyes of others and sometimes from his own conscience, but can never impose upon the Elohim. Paul, looking forward to such a time as this, said, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man as should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law dishonest thy Elohim. Romans 2:21-23. Unto the careless and indifferent, Job comments as follows: it shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of the dead shall devour his strength. Job 18:13. For the seven heads are to symbolically point out these high places ruled by the unsanctified leaders who have attempted to mix the sacred with the common and refuse to hear the word of the Yahweh. The biblical number seven, denoting completeness, naturally would comprise all Christendom at the time of the prophetic truth is that the prophetic truth is made known. Now this all Christendom means all of the house of Israel. Especially the house of Israel. Such apostasy is not a strange thing in the history of the Elohim's people. For time and again, the church has fallen under a satanic flood. In the Luther's day, conditions were as bad as when the church crucified Yahshua. If this generation is more wicked than any before it, what would immunize the church from just such an apostasy? It is accepted by the most Bible students that prophecies of this nature are understood only when the prophetic object in view is fully developed. Therefore, this is the time of which the symbols speak. However, there is another angle to this, by which we shall prove that the facts presented are true. One head wounded unto death. John says, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death. As a wounded head was, has reference to the stroke delivered to the papacy by the Luther, for the exile of the Pope in 1798 was a sign of the completeness of the wound and that the prophetic period had ended, thus fulfilling the words, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity, Revelation 13:10. Had not the papacy received the deadly wound by the Luther, the Pope could not have been put into the prison by the French general, for before the pontifical authority received Luther's sword, the Pope reigned supreme. But the blow weakened his power, and the result was that Protestantism came under the stage of the came upon the stage of the action, for the continual infliction began to irritate the head. Until finally the Pope landed behind the prison bars, for the annoyance continued until 1870, when ultimately the temporal power of the Pope was taken away. That being the last vexation of the head, it showed that it was left to heal its deadly wound. Quoting the words of the Luther explaining how the papacy was wounded, put forward Elohim's word, I preached and wrote, this was all I did. Okay, now, we were talking about, Vital was talking about 1870, was when the Pope landed behind the bar in 1798, but the annoyance continued until 1870, when ultimately the temporal power of the Pope was taken away. But what was 1870? That was in the time of the seventh church, the Laodicean church, was in charge of the candlestick, the Adventist church. Okay. So what does that tell us? That tells us that the Adventist church, by weakening its stance on its prophesying against the Catholic church, protesting, that as they began to weaken their protest, the Catholic Church grew stronger. And as the Catholic Church had already infiltrated the Adventists by 1870 anyway, and it shows out there that they weakened the Adventists where they couldn't protest, and not being able to protest, in the head it heals. According to the words of the Luther explaining how the papacy was wounded, I put forward Elohim's word, I preached and wrote, this is all I did, and yet while I was asleep, the word that I had preached overthrew popery. Brother Johnson said there at his place in Kermit one day, thrust his fist in the air and he said, I'm going to take on the Pope. Okay. Well, that's all the further it went. Because if he'd done what Luther did, put forth the pure word of Yahweh, he might have realized his dream one day. Let us continue. So he says, the word that I had preached overthrew popery, so that neither prince nor emperor has done it so much harm. And yet I did nothing. The word alone did it all. The Great Controversy, page 190. I began this work in Elohim's name, and said Luther, it will be ended without me and by his might. Page 142. Let none misunderstand the following statement, for the same author has recorded them both. Therefore, it would be unjust to misconstrue the one statement, for by so doing, we would throw out of the harmony the other, speaking of the 1260 years we read. This period, as stated in the preceding chapters, began with the supremacy of the papacy, AD 538, and terminated in the 1798. At that time, the Pope was made captive by the French army, and the papal power received its deadly wound, and the prediction was fulfilled. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Note that the aim of the author in this statement is not to tell how the wound was received, but to show that the prophetic period ended with the imprisonment of the Pope, which fulfilled not the words, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death, Revelation 13:3. But rather the scriptures quoted, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity, Revelation 13:10. Shall we ignore Elohim and his spirit and give to Berthier the credit, thus justifying stupidity? All right, now, let's watch this right here. So now it says that the Catholic Church, the Pope, led into captivity. And then it says that that head shall go into captivity. Okay. So now what did the Adventist Church do when they finally got rid of Ellen G. White and the General Conference was in sole possession of the kingdom? And they had joined up with the Jesuit Catholic Church. They agreed to join up and let the Jesuits come in and run the Adventist Church. And so the Catholic Church led the Adventists into captivity. The Pope, the Jesuit General, sent his Jesuit in there to take over the Adventist Church. They led the Adventists into captivity. Mm-hmm. So the Adventists that chose to stay with the General Conference were led into captivity. Thus reading their feeding pasture came to a close, basin. So now what happened with the Shepherd Rod movement? V.T. Hollif died in 55, and he was leading his the Adventist people out of captivity. Okay. And he led a remnant out of captivity that joined the Rod from 1930 to 55. They were led out of the captivity that the Catholic Church had taken the Adventists into captivity. And then V.T. Hollif delivered them out of captivity into the second feeding pasture at Mount Carmel. Okay. Now when V.T. Hollif dies, what happened? The General Conference takes back over again. because his successor, Ben Roden, that took over, what's the first thing he did? He and his wife went to the General Conference President at Washington, D.C., and made overtures to them to let us join back up again. And the General Conference loved the idea. And so they were preparing to take back over the Shepherd Rod from Ben Roden and Lois Roden. They were leading the Adventists back into captivity. They had been delivered by V.T. Hutton. Well, Ben Roden's time was up in 1970. Brother Johnson took over as a new leader. And what did he do? The few that followed Brother Johnson came back out of captivity that Ben Roden had let them into. Those that left Ben Roden and followed Brother Johnson into the third feeding pasture, they were led out of captivity. Brother Johnson led them out of captivity. But when Brother Johnson apostatized, went back into idolatry, what did he do? He went back and joined Babylon. Who runs Babylon? The Catholic Church. So instead of taking on and defeating the Pope like he said he's going to do, he went and joined him. So the Catholic Church then led him into captivity. And he said, those that he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. So Brother Johnson led his flock into captivity. And then what happened to him? He went into captivity because when Yahshua came to reckon with that slothful servant for doing that, he took away his talent and he appointed him his portion with the hypocrites and cut him off from being his leader. So Brother Johnson ended up in the captivity with those that chose to stay with him. It says so right here in Revelation 13. Shall we ignore Elohim and his spirit and give to Berthier the credit, thus justifying stupidity? His deadly wound was healed. So instead of Brother Johnson keeping the wound open and reopening it and agitating like he said he's going to do, he quit agitating it, and so the deadly wound was totally healed then by 2002 when Yahshua came to visit his flock and he took the leadership away from the old leader and gave it to the new leader, Elijah David. And that constituted the complete healing of the wound of the Catholic Church. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. Revelation 13:3. Brother William Miller proclaimed the prophetic period of the 2300 days prior unto 1844. That wonderful prophecy was delivered unto Christendom with the great power by the Spirit of Elohim. Though the leaders of the nominal churches could not contradict the truth presented by the Miller, they turned a deaf ear unto the doctrine taught by him. But as a disappointment came in 1844 through the misunderstanding of what was to transpire at the end of the prophetic period, the movement created by the Miller came unto its end. The second angel's message of Revelation 14:8 had announced that Babylon, the churches prior to 1844, had fallen. That is to say that Elohim would let no light shine upon his word through these fallen churches. Had Elohim not called forth another Protestant movement, the deadly wound would have been healed at that time. And so he called forth the Adventists, and they kept the wound open and kept agitating. And then whenever they laid down the gauntlet, Yahweh brought upon another one, a protester, V.T. Hall of 1930, and he agitated the wound and kept it open. And then whenever he died, and Ben Roden tried to cause the wound to be completely healed, Yahweh took him out of the way and raised up another leader, Brother Stephen Johnson, to restore the sanctuary and expose the Catholic Church for what it really is. And so Brother Johnson kept the wound open. But then when Brother Johnson apostatized, look what happened. The deadly wound finally was healed. Right. By the divinely called movement and aided by the writings of the Spirit of Prophecy, Elohim's intention was to keep the deadly wound on the head. But the prophetic word of the Elohim said his deadly wound was healed. Since Elohim's holy word declares that the wound was healed, and as the prophecy cannot be broken, it is positive that the wound is healed. Okay, so now, there you have, there's your prophecy. And when did I say, it was shown that it was healed? 2002. Kermit, Texas. But if Protestantism by the obedience in the Elohim's word is what inflicted the wound, then pure Protestantism only can keep the painful sore on the head. Only true Protestantism. Okay, so the shepherd rod was a true Protestantism. The basin, Adventist Church, Laodicea, was a true Protestantism. Verlis Johnson, 1970, was true Protestantism. Okay, let's continue. If the wound is healed, then it is evident that they unto whom Elohim had committed the message for a perishing world have been defeated in the same manner as every movement since the world began. It is a most wonderful thing to note how the old enemy has succeeded in defiling the church in every age through its leadership. The highest human intellect has been continually led into the error and thus have served Satan to their own downfall. The Elohim's people never profit by these historical and biblical facts. Are not these things written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come? Elohim, by his holy word, command, cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils. For wherein is he to be accounted of? Isaiah 2:22. As it has been accepted that the exile of the Pope in 1798 was a signal that the infliction had been accomplished, so then, as he has gained back his temporal power, it further proves that the deadly wound is healed. These facts cannot be denied, for it is admitted that the incident of 1798 is true, therefore the one in 1929 cannot be refuted. That being so, this is the time to which the prophetic symbol speaks. His deadly wound was healed. Read the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, for the entire volume deals with that subject. All the world wondered after the beast. His deadly wound was healed, John says, and all the world wondered after the beast. Note that the world wondered after the beast and not after the head. Therefore, it cannot mean that the world would necessarily have to enroll in the membership of the system represented by the head. The significance is that all the world has partaken of the spirit of the beast worldliness. The world in the general has never been otherwise. It could not be said that all the world wondered after the beast. If the Pope whom Elohim has entrusted, if the people whom Elohim has entrusted with the gospel are free from the spirit of the beast, but it must be that they have betrayed their trust and partaken of its spirit. Where is the distinction between the church and the world? You couldn't tell the distinction down at Kermit. You couldn't tell it with the rodents. They took over after V.T. Hollis death. You couldn't tell it from the world. I mean, they just made a beeline right to Washington, D.C., to the headquarters of the Seventh-day Adventists there in that area. Just couldn't wait to get an appointment with the president of the General Conference, which was nothing but a Jesuit. And Ben Roden and his wife come back bragging how that they are just meeting with the leaders of the Adventist Church, their conference presidents, their local presidents, and so forth. Let's go ahead. The name of blasphemy, and upon his head is the name of blasphemy, that is resistance of known truth, expression of defiant impotency, and irreverence toward Elohim, are things held sacred, marking Elohim's personality and authority. For the prophet Isaiah, looking forward unto this time of the wholesale deception, headed by the so-called spiritual guide, says, and in that day seven women shall take a hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread, and we're on apparel only, let us be called by thy name to take away our reproach, Isaiah 4:1. It is an admitted fact among the Bible students that churches are symbolized by women. Okay, pure women, pure church, as in Jeremiah 6:2, Revelation 12:1. Vile women, corrupt church, as in Revelation 17:4 and 5. Isaiah says there are seven women. The number that comprises these same churches. They say we will eat our own bread. That is, they want to have their own way. They care not for the Elohim's way, his word. We will wear our own apparel. That is, they want their own plans and the preference unto the Elohim's plans or his righteousness. Thereby they clothe themselves with the self-righteousness. Their aim is to be called by the one man's name. That is, by the name of the Yeshua, Christian, to take away their reproach. People have come to suppose they can do most anything under the guise of the Christianity and get away with it. Elohim will let them continue their course until they, like Belshazzar, have passed the boundary line of the divine grace, and then he will call them into the account. And they worship the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Revelation 13:4. The question may be asked, how can professed Christians worship the dragon? And I'm talking about Gilead Center. How could they do that? The answer is easy. And the worship of the dragon can be clearly seen. The present system of the worship by the so-called Christian institution is unquestionably pagan. Sunday, Christmas, and Easter keeping, etc., originated in the ancient Babylon. Well, these are the things that Kermit wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, but they would do their own personal birthday celebration, and that's just, that keeps them connected to all those pagan rituals. Okay, originated in ancient Babylon from the old pagan religion in the honor of the sun god. Christians in the modern times assume the honor of the Most High Elohim with pagan customs, calling them Christian doctrines. Protestantism has taken a grip on these pagan festivals as a leech on a human body. As the sluggard sucks the blood unaware that his satisfaction brings him to destruction, just so with the Protestants and their pagan commemorations, even daring to call them by the name of Yeshua, blasphemy indeed. Every student of the ancient history knows this to be true. Likewise, every Bible student knows these so-called Christian festivals are unbiblical as well as unchristian. Well, celebrating your own birthday is one of those. If these institutions were Christian or biblical, they would certainly have been spoken of in the Bible. But since they are not found in the word of Elohim, Christians had better leave them alone, lest they be found worshiping the dragon. This brings further us to this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. We're going to close this service now with a song. Shall we gather at the river? Shall we gather at the river, where bright angel feet have trod? With this crystal tide forever flowing by the throne of Yah. Yes, we'll gather at the river, beautiful, beautiful river. Gather at the saints at the river that flows by the throne of Yah. On the bosom of the river, where the Savior King we hold, we shall meet in sorrow never, neath the glory of the throne. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of Yah. Ere we reach the shining river, lay we every burden down. Grace our spirit will deliver and provide a robe and crown. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of Yom. Soon we'll reach the shining river. Soon our pilgrimage will see. Soon our happy hearts will quiver with the melody of peace. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of